20-7052, United States versus McDonald. And counsel, we are ready when you are.
Thank you, Your Honor. Before I proceed, can I just make sure everybody can hear me okay?
I can hear you.
Yes.
Thank you. May it please the court, I'm Keith Bradley. I'm representing Mr. McDonald, the defendant and appellant in this case. Mr. McDonald pleaded guilty, not with a plea agreement. He simply pleaded guilty and accepted responsibility for his crime, which the government recognized and the court did as well. But he did not mean to signal that he did and is responsible for anything and everything that the government might accuse him of. He objected vigorously to important aspects of the PSR. And to appreciate the significance of those disputes, let's be clear. His sentence was a little over 24 years, and every one of the disputes that we've raised on appeal is worth, roughly speaking, 3.5 years. And it varies depending on the guidelines calculations a bit, but these are important disputes. This court has repeatedly held that when a defendant objects to a fact in a PSR, the government must prove that fact at a sentencing hearing.
But if the defendant doesn't specifically object, then there's no requirement that there be an evidentiary hearing on it, correct?
That's correct. If the defendant does not object to the PSR, the court can take the PSR to fact. In this case, though, Mr. McDonald did object. He objected about that the amount of drugs was wrong. He objected that he had not obstructed justice. He objected to a couple of other enhancements. Notably, he did not object to every enhancement. This was not a blanket, I just object to everything in the report. He objected to things that he thought were not true. When on disputed issues like that, disputed issues of fact, a PSR is not evidence. In the government's brief, there are the brief discusses at length, you know, like how there is this thing in the PSR and there's that thing, presents it as though the record shows, but in fact, for these disputes of fact, there is nothing in the record. There is no evidence whatsoever. So to be clear, there was no pretrial evidentiary hearing in this case, in Mr. McDonald's case. There was no trial. Mr. McDonald notified the government of his intent to plead guilty well in advance of the trial. And at the sentencing hearing, Mr. McDonald presented his own witness to support his motion for a downward variance, and the government chose to rest on the PSR. So I'd like to walk through just a couple of examples of this, of how this plays out. Globally speaking, on all of these disputes of fact, the government was obligated to introduce evidence of some form and to bear its burden of the preponderance and introduce nothing at all. And what I want to walk through as I go through a couple of examples is to illustrate why this is not just an academic technicality that the PSR says that a thing and it's probably right. There are genuine disputes here. So, for example, one of the enhancements in Mr. McDonald's case was for obstruction of justice. Yes. I heard a question coming. The PSR asserts, and this is really what this rests on, it is paragraph 39 of the PSR that says, 37, that says that Mr. McDonald understood who a particular informant was and then told his mother to tell her nephew, one of the other people apparently involved, that he, quote unquote, better do something about that and better handle it.
They have recorded telephone call from the jail, right?
That is my understanding, yes. That telephone call is not in the record. It's not in evidence. The PSR asserts that there is a recorded telephone call, and all we have is those eight words, not the rest of the call. There's no context.
But so you're not disputing that the words were said. You're disputing the inference that the sentencing court took from those words? I'm trying to focus
correct.
Your argument.
Thank you. Yes, we are disputing that Mr. McDonald was issuing an instruction to engage in some violent act or anything else to persuade this witness not to testify or to testify differently. Those eight words, which is all that we have, Mr. McDonald has disputed that those were an attempt to obstruct justice. There is the record. The call is not in the record. There's no testimony from anybody about what they thought those words meant. What we have is that the district court, reading those eight words, concluded that they were a threat. I should mention that there is a dispute in the briefs about the fact that whether anything was carried out, and the government observes that an attempt does not need to be successful to earn an obstruction of justice enhancement. This court has held that, to be sure, but whether in this context, where there is no evidence of what Mr. McDonald said or what he meant or what anybody else understood by it, the fact that the PSR does not report anything was carried out in the way actually influencing the witness, at a minimum does not support the notion that those eight words were meant that there should be a threat. This is, after all, a case where the government asserts that Mr. McDonald was the ringleader of a large organization distributing methamphetamine. And I would say, if you discovered that one of your customers was an informant, there are several things that you should do about that, one of which would be to stop selling to that person. There are lots of things that could mean, and obviously we're not here on this proceeding to decide what it means. But again, I come back to, there's no evidence. The government didn't introduce anything. As another example, the parties disputed. Mr. McDonald disputes that he was a ringleader in this conspiracy at all, that he was simply a street drug seller who was not controlling other people, and at most, he instructed his mother to deliver drugs occasionally.
Again, they have recorded phone calls, or at least it's reflected in the PSR, of him giving instructions both to, I think, his girlfriend and his mother about who to see and who to call and use my name and deliver drugs, pick up drugs. I mean, it sounds to me like he's directing. And it doesn't have to be a big organization for this enhancement to apply, does it? All you have to do is to be ordering around one other person.
I certainly, it is not met. The enhancement does not depend on its being a large organization. And I don't claim to know what Mr. McDonald did or did not do during during the course of the crime. But he did vigorously object during the pre-sentencing process that he did not control other people, and that the evidence did not show that he did. In that context, I submit that it's not proper for the district court to rely on what it thinks the telephone recording might have said based on what the PSR says. The recording itself is not in evidence. The PSR is taken out of context, and I, to be candid, I've never thought of PSRs as necessarily being unbiased documents. It is the office doing its job. That is what evidence is for: is to be able for the parties to test what what that recording actually said, what Mr. McDonald said on it, what was meant.
So on
this
one,
which, to be candid,
unlike the one we just talked about, the obstruction one, on this one, you're challenging that these words were never said, that's reported in these calls? Or are you just again saying you can't make this inference from the reported words?
I believe Mr. McDonald has disputed both of these points, that the recording with what he said does not exist in that form, and that he's in prison, but that The recording does not say what he is paraphrased as being said. This is one of the things that's also noticeable about the PSR. It quotes him on one occasion, which is these eight words that we talked about with respect to obstruction of justice. Most of the rest of what it has to say about what Mr. McDonald said on recorded phone calls is paraphrase. And there again, paraphrase is exactly why one would want evidence, not the filtered description summary of it in the PSR.
So I want to just make sure I understand. Did the defendant object specifically to those defects in the PSR, each of them, and the district court made no ruling or finding on those, or are you simply complaining the district court didn't have a hearing on that?
The district court did make a finding. The district court found that the PSR was correct.
But was that a general statement, or did he make it specifically as to each of the objections?
Specifically as to each objection. With respect to obstruction, for example, the government, the district court did consider Mr. McDonald's objection that the evidence does not show an obstruction of justice. And the district court said, I believe the PSR is correct. That is our core concern, that the district court did what this court's cases specifically prohibit, that in the face of an objection that the facts in the PSR are incorrect, the district court is not entitled to simply rely on it.
Did you really make an objection that the facts were incorrect, that these recordings were inaccurately reported? I don't think you made that objection to the district court.
I will grant you that the objections could be clearer as they always could be. But for example, with respect to obstruction of justice, without further explanation by what was meant to by better do something about that, it cannot be found that Mr. McDonald actually obstructed justice. That is what the objection said to the pre-sentence report on that point. And what this court has said in previous cases about objections to the PSR is that they don't need to be specific. It's not a question of saying this fact, I dispute this particular fact, but a question of alerting the district court to the concerns, which Mr. McDonald certainly did on each of these points.
Counselor, I think we do have authority that the objection to PSRs need to be precise. I mean, what's the district judge going to do if they just simply say, I disagree with the pre-sentence report? You've got to give the district court a very precise target.
I should be more precise myself, Your Honor, when I say that. I certainly agree that an objection that says the PSR is wrong would not be adequate for this purpose. But the objections in this case go far beyond that. There is an extensive document in the record that is Mr. McDonald's objections to the PSR that say on each of these points, the drug quantity is incorrect because here are the specific drug quantities I disagree with.
Did the district court then say, generally, I've looked at each of these objections and I overrule them? Or did he overrule them one by one? Or did he simply ignore everything and simply say, I'm going to go with the pre-sentence report?
Let's talk about the drug quantity as an example of this. The district court said, you have objected to the drug quantity. I look at the pre-sentence report and I see that there's a bunch of evidence recited there. Again, incorrectly, because it's not evidence. But I see that there's a bunch of evidence recited there, and the PSR looked at corroborating evidence from various sources and generally made conservative estimates about the drug quantity. Therefore, I will accept it.
And that's what I remembered you're saying in the briefing, in the record. I just don't see how you can say that wasn't an adequate ruling to an objection and therefore validated the PSR as something the court could rely on.
I see that I'm running out of time, and I would love to reserve 30 seconds, but if I may, I'd just like to respond quickly to that.
Oh, don't worry. Just reserve your time. I'll worry about that later. Why don't you just reserve your time?
Okay, and we'll give you the 30 seconds. Okay, Mr. Quinn?
Judge McHugh, and may it please the court, Michael Quinn for the United States. This appeal was decided by application of a straightforward principle. In a PSR, when a fact is recounted, for instance, person A said X, a defendant can make two different types of objections to that statement. First, deny that this fact ever occurred. In other words, say person A never said X. Or second, say that even though person A said X, that is not sufficient to meet the preponderance of the evidence standard the government must meet. Every single objection Mr. McDonald made in this case, in the record below, is of the second variety. And Judge McHugh, you are absolutely correct that nowhere in the record did Mr. McDonald ever say, I didn't say these words on this recorded call. So with respect to drug quantity and with respect to the other three enhancements, every objection was there's not enough evidence. For instance, with respect to the drug quantity, if we look at pages 32 to 33 of the PSR, and this is where the defendant's objections begin, the objections are this person who's identified as a CW in the pre-sentence report has been unidentified. I can't verify their credibility, and I don't think that's enough evidence. And
but that's since been remedied, right? That person was later identified.
Exactly correct, Your Honor. This person was identified in the ATF reports that was produced to them in discovery, and then the government alerted them that this person is that person before the sentencing took place. So that was, in fact, remedied, and that was not raised again at the sentencing proceeding. And just to take one more example on the drug quantity, on page 33, the objection to R.J. Michael's statement is that R.J. Michael is too unreliable for his word to count. It was never R.J. Michael did not say, I sold this amount of drugs. So that distinguishes between these two kinds of objections. This court has said in cases like Chi and Rodriguez-Delma that an objection to an ultimate conclusion in the PSR does not trigger the district court's fact-finding obligations. And here, all of the objections are to what is the drug quantity and whether or not I did obstruct justice. It was not to whether or not I said these words. So again, the objections were all about the legal significance to draw from a certain set of facts that the defendant failed to dispute below, and therefore the district court correctly accepted as undisputed in the PSR. When the district court adopted the PSR's findings, because they were, again, unchallenged, except for the ultimate conclusions,
your point is that it is not an objection to a statement to say the person who is alleged to have made that statement is completely non-credible.
Correct, Your Honor. That is a legal argument for then the government and the courts, the district court, to think about whether or not the person is credible enough. But when a defendant makes that objection, the government has no obligation to come in and prove that the person said this thing. That fact is admitted. The only question left is a legal one of whether the person saying this fact is sufficient to carry the government's burden of proof. And my friend made the mention of the fact that a PSR is not necessarily an unbiased document, but that's exactly why we have the objection process below. And that's something that Mr. McDonald failed to take advantage of. He only wanted to argue the legal points, and he didn't bring in any evidence or with particular factual or make objections that were particularized to any of the facts recounted in the PSR. So this principle covers the entire appeal and all of their arguments. If the court has no further questions, we would ask that you affirm the sentence.
Are there any questions from the panel?
No.
Okay. And Mr. Bradley, we will give you your 30 seconds.
Thank you. This is a little bit of a magic words concept. Mr. McDonald's, again, on obstruction of justice, says, without further explanation by what was meant by better do something about that, it cannot be found by a preponderance that Mr. McDonald actually obstructed justice. The government suggests that this cannot count as an objection to the fact that he was issuing a threat unless there were magic words that I did not mean that. I think it's pretty clear that Mr. McDonald was objecting that that's not what he meant. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement.